Welcome back to the Deep Dive. And today, we're not just, you know, reading the news. We're looking at what feels like a blueprint for, well, a different kind of civilization. We're working off this dispatch from the Tekken Army, a report from February 2nd, 2026. And I have to be honest, usually when we look at a single day's news, it's a bit of a mixed bag, a gadget here, a lawsuit there. But this day, February 2nd.
It feels coordinated, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like the universe just decided to drop a massive patch update all at once.
It feels breathless. The sheer velocity of the tech landscape in this thing is, it's intense. It's one of those moments where you realize the future isn't arriving anymore.
Yeah.
It's just forcefully installing itself while we're busy making coffee.
That is a great way to put it. And what stands out to me in this dispatch isn't just the, you know, the cool factor. It's the structural shift. We aren't seeing incremental updates. We are looking at foundational changes to how money moves, where the internet physically lives, and who or what decides what we all read.
Exactly. It feels a little bit sci-fi, honestly. We have secret meetings at the White House about digital currency, satellites turning into data centers, robots building our laptops. So here's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to unpack three massive shifts happening on this one day.
Right. First, infrastructure. The plumbing of the world, financial and physical. So crypto and space.
Then we'll get into the crisis of code.
Yeah, that's a fascinating contrast between Google AI's ethics and the governance of Linux.
And finally, we'll land on what this actually feels like in your hands, Apple's new supply chain, some gaming rumors. But let's start at the very top, the White House.
The White House.
Yeah.
It's funny how often our tech deep dives start in political boardrooms lately.
It is. Okay, let's get into this. The source details a top secret summit on February 2nd, and the guest list is
eclectic,
to say the least. You've got senior White House officials, the CEOs of major Wall Street banks, and right there with them, the CEO of Coinbase.
And that tableau is incredibly significant. For the last, 10 years, we've been watching this sort of cold war. You had TradFi, traditional finance, slow, regulated, centralized, and in the wild west of crypto-fast, volatile anti-establishment.
Right.
Seeing them in the same room at the White House, it signals the war is over. It looks like a truce.
The source calls it a regulation deadlock that they're trying to break. But here's the kicker. There was a leak. And leaks from meetings this high level are almost never an accident.
Oh, never. A leak is usually a trial balloon. See how the market reacts.
So the balloon they're floating is a potential deal to integrate stablecoins directly into the federal payment system. Now, for the listener who just uses Apple Pay and doesn't think about the plumbing, why does integrating stablecoins matter? Is this just the government trying to be cool?
Yeah, far from it. This is about survival and efficiency. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about how money moves right now. You wire money to Europe, it can take days to settle. It's clunky. It runs on like 1970s architecture.
Right. Business days, as if the internet sleeps on weekends. I hate that.
Exactly. But stable coins, these are cryptocurrencies pegged one-to-one to a currency like the US dollar. They don't sleep. They settle instantly, 247 on a blockchain.
Okay.
So by integrating them, the government isn't validating, you know, crypto gambling or memecoins. They're validating the rails. They're admitting that blockchain plumbing is just plain better than bank plumbing.
That's the distinction. The source calls this the mainstream moment. It feels like we're moving away from crypto being just a speculative asset. You know, buy a coin and pray it goes to the moon so you can buy a Lambo.
Precisely. That phase is arguably ending, or at least becoming a sideshow. This moves crypto from a casino chip to a sanctioned utility. If digital blockchain-based dollars flow through the federal system, that means instant settlement for everything. Payroll, taxes, B2B transfers. It's the internet speed upgrade for the U.S. dollar.
But I have to ask, why would the big banks agree to this? Doesn't this cut them out of the loop? If I can move digital dollars instantly, why do I need Chase taking a fee?
That's the billion-dollar question. And it's probably why they were in the room. They know they can't stop the tech.
So they have to co-opt it.
They have to. They want to be the custodians, the gateways. If the Fed sanctions stablecoins, the banks want to be the ones issuing the wallets.
Yeah.
They're pivoting from block this technology to own this infrastructure.
If you can't beat them, join them, or maybe regulate them until you own them.
Exactly. It's an infrastructure upgrade for money itself, but one that keeps the current power players in the game.
Speaking of infrastructure upgrades that sound like science fiction, let's look up. Way up. Because while bankers shaking hands in D.C., Elon Musk is filing paperwork. And the numbers here are just staggering.
They really are. The source says SpaceX filed for 1 million new satellite licenses.
1 million? I mean, we thought the sky was getting crowded with the first Starlink constellation, which was what, a few thousand?
A few thousand, growing to tens of thousands.
Yeah.
But a million. That's an exponential leap. It's a swarm.
And the twist here is that this isn't just for better internet, right? He's not just trying to make sure I can stream Netflix in the middle of nowhere.
No, and that's what's so fascinating. The source says explicitly that SpaceX is targeting a space-based infrastructure to power and data sync AI super data centers in orbit.
AI super data centers in space.
Okay, pause. Why? I guess space is cool, but sending servers into orbit is incredibly expensive. Why not just build another data center in Nevada?
Well, let's look at the constraints on AI right now. If you talk to anyone training these massive models, they run into two walls. One, heat. These chips run incredibly hot.
Right.
Two, energy. They consume just an insane amount of electricity, like a small city's worth.
And on Earth, that strains the power grid.
Correct. And you have to cool them, which uses water. It's a mess. But in orbit...
Space is cold?
Space is very cold. Free cooling. And more importantly, solar power.
No clouds, no night. Exactly. Source points this out. Solar power in space is effectively infinite. Musk's logic, it seems, is to build the backbone of AI compute off-planet by 2030. Export the heavy lifting, the model training, the massive number crunching to a vacuum where he has endless energy and free cooling.
So the hard work happens in space and they just beam the answers down.
That's the implication. You wouldn't use it for, say, competitive gaming because of the latency, the lag, but for training a model where you just need raw power for weeks at a time, it makes perfect sense.
It's a logical, if extremely ambitious, step. You're basically solving the energy crisis on Earth by exporting the demand to space.
It also creates a fascinating new geopolitical layer. If the smartest AI brains are literally in orbit, owned by a private company, hovering over national borders, who regulates that?
Wow, yeah. It's completely outside the jurisdiction of a local power grid. That connects right back to the crypto story. We're seeing these huge systems, finance and intelligence, detaching themselves from the ground, the financial plumbing moves to the blockchain, and the cognitive plumbing moves to orbit.
It creates a very different world map. Physical borders matter less and less to these technologies. It's a layer above the map.
It really is. Yeah, but let's come back down to Earth for a second, because while the hardware is going to space, the software down here is having a bit of an identity crisis. The source calls this next section the crisis of code.
And this is a crucial pivot. We've talked about the pipes. Now we have to talk about what's flowing through them. And we're seeing two very different crises, one at Google and one with Linux.
Okay, let's start with Google, or I guess Google's AI, Gemini. This headline is, well... it's controversial. The source called it Google Discovered, the AI clickbait controversy.
This touches a nerve that's been raw for publishers for a long, long time. The news is that Google's AI is under fire for rewriting news headlines.
Wait, rewriting them? You mean I write a thoughtful, nuanced article and Google's algorithm just changes the title before it shows it to someone?
That's the accusation. And the motive, according to the source, is purely to boost engagement CTR click-through rate.
Oh, that is messy. So publishers are accusing Google of damaging their editorial integrity. The source even uses the phrase yellow journalism.
It is a throwback. But here's the difference. Back then, it was a human editor deciding to be sensational to sell papers. A human made a moral choice, or lack of one. Now, it's an algorithm.
That's a scary distinction. The algorithm doesn't know what truth or integrity is.
No.
It just knows what gets a click.
Exactly. It's an optimization machine. If Area Man Eats Sandwich gets 10 clicks, but Shocking Food Scandal gets 100, the AI picks the second one. It doesn't care about the author's intent. It cares about efficiency.
It's like having an editor who doesn't understand irony or ethics, but understands exactly how to hack human dopamine.
And for publishers, this is an existential threat. If the AI turns a serious investigation into clickbait, the publisher's brand takes the hit, not Google's. The reader just thinks, wow, the New York Times is getting trashy, when the Times didn't even write that headline.
It's just chaos, pure algorithmic chaos. But if Google represents that side of code governance, this next story feels like the total opposite. It's all about structure. It's about Linux.
Yes. The Linux succession plan.
Now, we should probably pause here because I think a lot of people have heard the word Linux, but they don't realize that the entire modern world is resting on it.
That is not an exaggeration. Linux is the kernel, the core code that runs almost everything, the whole internet. Linux servers, the Android phone in your pocket, Linux, the stock market, Linux, even the space servers we just talked about.
Yep.
Probably running on Linux.
And for decades, this massive global infrastructure has been guided by essentially one person, Linus Torvalds, the creator.
The benevolent dictator for life, as the open source community calls him. He has been the final say on what goes into the code. He is the gatekeeper of the internet's DNA.
And the news on February 2nd is that Linus has proposed a new organizational structure. The source calls it his succession plan.
This is a huge moment. The source poses this really haunting question. Can the internet's bedrock survive without its legendary founder?
It's almost Shakespearean. The king preparing to step down. Why now?
It's just risk management. Mm. They call it the bus factor. If Linus gets hit by a bus tomorrow and there's no clear process for who takes over, we have a global crisis.
So he's trying to replace himself with a system.
Exactly. Right. And you contrast this with the Google story.
Yeah.
Google is dealing with an AI running amok, maximizing clicks without any human ethical oversight. Linux is doing the opposite. They're trying to design a human governance structure, a committee or a constitution that can maintain the integrity of the code without a dictator.
It really shows how fragile some of this stuff is. We take the internet for granted, but it relies on specific people making specific decisions.
Absolutely. One is a crisis of automation overriding humanity. The other is a crisis of preserving human continuity in a machine world.
Okay, so we've got space servers, crypto plumbing, code in crisis. Let's bring this all the way down to the listener's life, something I can actually touch. The consumer tech section.
This is where the rubber meets the road, or I guess where the robot meets the laptop.
I love this story because it solves a problem I literally have right now. Apple launched this new system called Customize and Go.
Right.
The problem it solves is that classic configuration hell. You want a new MacBook, but you want the 32 gigs of RAM, not the 16. You click buy and the website says, great, see you in 3 weeks.
Because that custom order goes to a massive factory in China or Vietnam. It gets built, put on a ship, then a train, then a van. That supply chain is long and slow.
Exactly. But Customize and Go changes that. The source says they are using local distribution robotic hubs.
This is the key. They aren't shipping it from across the ocean anymore.
No. They say these hubs can assemble your custom specs and deliver them within 24 hours.
The logistics of that are just incredible. It means Apple has moved the final assembly line into your neighborhood, or at least your metro area. It's the decentralization of manufacturing.
It's wild. You click a button and a robot 10 miles away grabs a chassis, slots in the RAM, screws it together, and puts it on a courier.
It connects back to that theme of efficiency. It removes the friction of geography.
Mm.
But think about the economic shift. We spent 30 years globalizing supply chains to make it where labor is cheapest. This reverses that. It says, make it where the customer is fastest.
Because the labor is a robot, and a robot costs the same in Chicago as it does in Shenzhen.
Precisely. It kills inventory cost.
Mm.
Apple doesn't have to guess how many laptops to ship to New York.
Right.
They just ship parts and build exactly what's ordered when it's ordered.
I just like the idea of instant gratification. I want my excessive RAM, and I want it tomorrow.
We all do. And technology is finally catching up to our impatience.
Speaking of impatience, let's wrap up with some entertainment news. Because even in 2026, we still need to relax. The Tekken Army Dispatch had some juicy gaming news.
It did. A very good day for strategy fans.
Civilization VII confirmed for release this month, and Dragon Quest VII reimagined.
The classics, yeah. Reinvented. It's kind of comforting to know that in the future, we're still playing Civilization. Some things never change.
Just one more turn. But the one that really caught my eye is the rumor about Sony. There's a state of play rumored for next week.
And the big ticket item?
A teaser for Project Orion, which is the sequel to Cyberpunk 2077.
Ah, yes. The game that defined an aesthetic for a decade.
And the specific detail here is that it's rumored to be set in a dystopian Chicago.
You know, it's funny. We start this deep dive talking about crypto becoming government money, AI servers moving to space, corporations rewriting headlines. And now we're talking about a game set in a high-tech dystopian future.
The line is getting blurry, isn't it?
It really is. When you look at the news about Google rewriting reality and robots building our computers locally, the world of cyberpunk doesn't look like fantasy anymore.
No.
It looks like the news.
That is a terrifyingly good point. A dystopian Chicago might just be a documentary by the time that game comes out.
Let's hope not. But it shows how our entertainment reflects our anxieties about tech. Cyberpunk is all about high tech, low life, and we're seeing the high tech part accelerating today. The challenge for us is to avoid the low life part.
So what does this all mean? We've covered a lot of ground today.
We have.
We've gone from White House meeting rooms to low Earth orbit, from the code of Linux to a robotic assembly line for MacBooks.
And if you stitch it all together, there is a narrative thread. It's about the restructuring of how the world works. It's about decoupling.
Yeah, it feels like the old rules, the rules of geography and borders are being rewritten on this one day in February 2026.
Yeah, they are. Think about that mainstream moment for crypto. That is the financial system decoupling from banking hours and physical cash. Think about the space servers. That is the cloud literally leaving the ground to bypass Earth's resource limits.
And Apple's robots. That's manufacturing decoupling from the factory of the world model.
Precisely. It's a moment of acceleration where the physical constraints we used to just accept, time, distance, energy, are being engineered away.
It's exciting, but it's also a lot to process. It feels like society's operating system is getting a major update, and we're just hoping it doesn't crash.
That's why we look at sources like this dispatch.
But
it freezes that acceleration for a moment so we can actually look at the patch notes.
Before we sign off, I want to leave the listener with something to chew on. You're always good at spotting the so what beyond the headlines.
Well, here's a provocative thought for you. We talked about money becoming code, unmoored from physical banks. We talked about servers moving to orbit, so the cloud is actually leaving the ground. And manufacturing is moving to local robotic hubs, so made in China or made in USA matters less.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
If our money is on the blockchain, our digital brain is in space, and our physical goods are made by robots down the street, are we witnessing the final death of geography? Does it matter where you are anymore, or where a country is? If the infrastructure of civilization is everywhere and nowhere at the same time, the map of the world means something very different than it did 10 years ago. We used to fight over land because land had the resources. Now the resources are in orbit or on a server.
That is a massive thought, the death of geography. I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. It's liberating, but also kind of disorienting.
It's worth thinking about.
Yeah.
Because if geography dies, what holds us all together?
Well, on that note, a note that will definitely keep me up tonight, we want to thank the Tekken Army, Majid, and Inspector Gemini for the source material.
Indeed. Fascinating stuff.
And thank you for listening. Stay curious, stay informed, and try not to worry too much about the satellites watching you. We'll see you in the next deep dive.
Goodbye.